No doubt you have seen a sticker on a laptop or a sign on someone's lawn that reads, "Love wins," or "Love equals love." Love Wins became popular after the 2015 U.S. Supreme Court decision in Obergefell versus Hodges, which ruled that the fundamental right to marry is guaranteed to same-sex couples and effectively made so-called same-sex marriage legal on a national level. Often the rationale for why same-sex couples should be allowed to marry is that love equals love. In other words, that there's no difference between the love shared between two men or two women and a man and a woman. Well, does love equal love? And is any of this really about love in the first place? I'm Dr. David Heiduk, and here's my take.
When you read scripture, you want to know that you're reading with the mind of the church. Verbum helps you read scripture in the light of the tradition by putting the magisterion within reach on all of your devices. Connect your daily scripture readings with the catechism, church fathers, and Catholic commentaries. Access a world-class Catholic library on all of your devices. Pray through scripture with step-by-step instructions on Lectio Divina. Right now, listeners of a Reason for Hope podcast can get started with Verbum with an extra free month. Take your spiritual reading, journaling, and studying to the next level with Verbum. To get started for free, visit the link above or below in the description.
And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to this podcast and give us a 5-star rating. So, does love equal love? In order to understand the answer to this question, we first need to come to an understanding of what love is. Most people hold that love is an emotion or feeling. It's not. At least, it's not primarily so. Sure, there may be good feelings associated with loving someone. Perhaps your heart races in excitement when you see them. Or the thought of them makes you feel warm inside. Or it seems as if your heart could just burst due to the joy you feel about them. Or you experience a longing to be near them or quiver at their touch. These experiences may accompany love, but they aren't love. Neither is love a sentiment of affection, nor of care, nor even duty. It is more and higher than any of this, although it may include some of this. One thing that is certain, love is not the same as sexual attraction. We'll get back to that a bit later on. Then, what is love? St. Thomas Aquinas wrote that to love is to will the good of another. This definition tells us a number of important things about love. First, love is primarily a choice we make, not a feeling we feel. This is what it means to will something. Notice, if love were a feeling, on some level, it would be out of our control. But if love is a choice, the whole point is that it is within our control. Another important thing we learn from this definition is that love is not only a choice, but it is a choice to act in a particular manner, namely, to act in accordance with what is good. So again, love is primarily an action, not an emotion. In this light, we see the purpose of the feelings often associated with love. These feelings are supposed to move us to action. This is the nature of emotions. We are moved by them. We may even say, "I feel moved," when we experience deep feelings. But emotions can be judged by what they move us to do. If they move us to do something which is evil, those emotions are not good. If they move us to do that which is good, then they are good. I don't mean here that emotions that lead us to evil are morally bad. We don't usually choose our feelings or reactions to things, so there can be no moral responsibility assigned to us for certain feelings. But if we recognize that a particular feeling is moving us to something that isn't good, then we do have a responsibility to suppress it. We most certainly should not act on it. Also, our feelings are all about us. Is love really reducible to how someone makes me feel? It seems to me that there is a danger here of using others for the way they make me feel, and also of feeling justified in leaving them when my feelings change or when times get too difficult. And this most certainly does not sound like love to me. By themselves, attraction, being drawn to certain values in a person, and desire, a longing to possess a person as a good for me, are not truly love, but are at best incomplete. As Pope Benedict XVI wrote, Eros, the love of desire, needs to be ennobled and purified by agape, the love of benevolence, willing the good of another, or else it is impoverished and loses its own nature. And as Pope St. John Paul II wrote before he became Pope in his book, Love and Responsibility, the love of a person for a person must be benevolent, or it will not be genuine. Indeed, it will not be love at all, but only egoism. But love meaning to act in accordance with what is good also means that love has an objective content, specifically, what is good. And what is good is not a matter of personal choice or subjective opinion. What is good is something objectively true. There are moral facts. Thus, in order to love, you need to know the truth about what is good. Knowledge precedes love, and love involves the intellect. You need to know what is truly good so you can choose to act in accordance with it. The good news here is that God has revealed to us what is good and what isn't. But we will come back to that in a little bit as well.
When you read Scripture, you want to know that you're reading with the mind of the church. Verbum helps you read Scripture in the light of the tradition by putting the Magisterion within reach on all of your devices. Connect your daily Scripture readings with the Catechism, Church Fathers, and Catholic commentaries. Access a world-class Catholic library on all of your devices. Pray through Scripture with step-by-step instructions on Lectio Divina. Right now, listeners of a Reason for Hope podcast can get started with Verbum with an extra free month. Take your spiritual reading, journaling, and studying to the next level with Verbum. To get started for free, visit the link above or below in the description. We hope that you're enjoying this episode. In case you didn't know, we do a lot more than just produce podcasts here at A Ray of Hope. We have a variety of ways that we evangelize through our culture through high-quality media and events. Click on the link above or below in the description, which will direct you right to our website where you can see the many ways that we're able to help you and your church community grow deeper in our Catholic faith. Now back to the episode.
So based on what has been said already, we can see that love does not equal love. There is something that love is and something that it isn't. But we need to go further. The phrase love equals love is specifically coined to justify so-called same-sex marriage. There are so many difficulties with this, but to get at them, we need to ask the question, what is marriage? And this question, believe it or not, leads back to a more foundational question. What is a person? If it's persons that are united in marriage, then one must ask how such persons are united. Is a person reducible to his or her consciousness or feelings or desires? Meaning, is the body not really part of the essence of a person, but only something we inhabit, an instrument we use and manipulate according to our own purposes? This view could be summed up by the phrase, we are persons with bodies. Or rather, is a person a body-soul unity, whereby the body is essential to the person, is included in the structural whole of the person's life and activity, and is the visible aspect of the person? This view could be summed up by the phrase, we are body persons. It is this latter view that is the Christian view, and the one, relevantly, that has been embodied in marriage laws historically throughout the history of Western civilization, going back even to pre-Christian times. So then, what is marriage? It is a personal union contracted by spoken vows, and consummated by bodily union. In biblical language, the two become one flesh, or one body. This bodily union is so fundamental to marriage that without it, marriage is not yet constituted in its full reality. And such a bodily union is only possible due to sexual complementarity. Only a man and a woman are capable of actually becoming one flesh. Though human beings are complete in themselves with regard to other functions, this is not the case with the procreative function. It is incomplete, only a part of a whole. It is only completed by uniting with a person with a complementary reproductive system. A man and a woman unite bodily to form a single organism working for a common purpose, procreation. That is, they become one body. As Princeton professor Robert P. George puts it, "What is unique about marriage is that it truly is a comprehensive sharing of life, a sharing founded on the bodily union made uniquely possible by the sexual complementarity of man and woman, and thus possible for this one flesh union to be the foundation of a relationship in which it is intelligible for two persons to bind themselves to each other in pledges of permanence, monogamy, and fidelity." Yes, marriage, by its very nature, is a sexual relationship. It is assumed that a husband and wife are engaging in sexual relations, and exclusively so. The spoken vows consent to this implicitly. As Pope St. John Paul II put it, "From the words whereby the man and the woman express their readiness to become one flesh," that is the vows, "we pass to the reality which corresponds to these words," that is, conjugal union. The union of their bodies completes the union of their persons, because they are their bodies. And this sexual relationship is naturally ordered to the procreation and education of children. However, even if the male-female couple is sterile, sexual union still makes the male and female one organism. In this particular instance, the act is the kind of act which ordinarily results in a child, even if in a particular instance it does not do so, whether due to age or infertility. And this means that the sexual union of a man and woman differs fundamentally from any other sexual acts. As Dr. George continues, "If acts that fulfill the behavioral conditions of procreation, whether or not the non-behavioral conditions happen to obtain, are in fact capable of uniting spouses interpersonally, thus providing the biological matrix of the multi-level union and sharing of life that marriage is, according to the traditional understanding long embodied in Western law, philosophy, and culture, then truly marital acts differ fundamentally in meaning, value, and significance from intrinsically non-marital sex acts, such as acts of sodomy and mutual masturbation." This is key. For those who do not hold that the person is his or her body, and thus reject that personal union is actually brought about through bodily union, or that marital union is naturally ordered to the procreation and education of children, then sex has nothing whatsoever intrinsically to do with marriage. In fact, it would have no real meaning at all. In this view, sex acts, any and all, that is, whether heterosexual or homosexual, monogamous or polyamorous, exclusive or casual, would be merely an instrumental means of expressing the emotions of the moment or of exchanging physical pleasure as the two or more people involved in the relationship see fit. This would effectively state that sex or marriage do not have any purpose other than a purely subjective and relativistic one. It would certainly contradict the idea that sex and marriage go together, which is how it has always been understood throughout human history and has been embodied in Western law, values, and culture, as Dr. George wrote. I would also argue that it would contradict our fundamental beliefs and moral sensibilities. If two people are married, no matter who they are, the assumption is that they are engaged in a sexual relationship, and one that is presumed to be exclusive. But this leads me to my next point. When people say love equals love, what they are really saying is, one, that love is a feeling, and that all such feelings are equal in value. This is their first mistake. And two, that any kind of sexual act is adequate to express such feelings. This is their next mistake. In other words, love equals love really means sex equals sex. To accept so-called same-sex marriage is really to accept an equivalence, moral and otherwise, between same-sex acts and heterosexual union. Laws codifying same-sex marriage affirm this equivalency in law, and this is part of why such laws are immoral and unjust, even though they are promoted in the name of justice. And it is interesting to note that someone who views the person, the human body, sex, and marriage in a way that rejects the traditional view, and thus holds that marriage can just as easily be between two men or two women as between a man and a woman, has surrendered any foundation for any restrictions on marriage whatsoever. Why would a sexual relationship, for example, or marriage, have to be restricted to only two people? Actually, there's a push for making marriage laws more accommodating to such relationships. Given that the numbers of those that are in either open relationships or polyamorous ones is on the rise, with modest numbers being at about 5% of all relationships in 2023, and with 51% of people under the age of 30 thinking that such relationships are morally acceptable. And another thing, why should incest laws still remain, especially among same-sex couples that have no worry of reproductive anomalies due to being too close in blood relation? Now, let me make clear, I'm not saying that those who support same-sex marriage support these things explicitly. What I am saying is that the philosophical reasoning is the same. They've let the cat out of the bag, and they can't get it back in. Beyond this, we said before that to love is to will the good of another. And God has let us know what is good and what isn't. He has written His law into the natures of things, and we can know this by reason. But He has also revealed His law to us in sacred scripture and sacred tradition, as it has been interpreted in the constant teaching of the church. And the scriptures, the tradition, and the constant teaching of the church is that marriage is only between one man and one woman, and that sexual relations belong exclusively within marriage, and that those acts must remain open to life, since marriage and sex are ordered to the procreation and education of children. This is the good that one must will if they are to love. This is why the church has always called any veering from this, like same-sex acts, grave sins. And sinning is the opposite of loving. As St. John Paul II wrote, when the conjugal act is deprived of its inner truth because it is deprived artificially of its procreative capacity, it also ceases to be an act of love. So when you hear love equals love, remember, we aren't talking about two people who just care for each other selflessly. Good friends can do that. Marriage is a particular kind of friendship. It is a sexual relationship, an intimate sharing of life and love that includes bodily union, and thus necessitates sexual complementarity. While there may be times in any marriage when sexual relations are postponed or, due to age or sickness or disability, halted, that doesn't mean that marriage isn't a sexual relationship. Marriage is about sex, even if it isn't only about sex. And why would the state be interested in marriage anyhow? Fundamentally, because it is a relationship that can produce children, future citizens, because it is between a man and a woman, and thereby make a family, which is the fundamental cell of society and the key to society's proper functioning. Well, that's my take. If you have a topic you'd like my take on, comment below or send an email to r4hpodcast@gmail.com. Come back next time when we will tackle a new issue. Until then, run the race, fight the good fight, and keep the faith.